You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy.
Hi, I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc, and welcome to Mom and Doc Talk. We're so excited to have you here for this really exciting conversation. We've got a guest who's joining us, who is a fellow naturopathic doctor and who is the author of this really great book. And I can't wait for you guys to meet her and learn a little bit more about what she does and like this book that she wrote that I think is a really great resource for the community. So we're excited to welcome Dr. Lindsay Wells, who is a naturopathic physician located in Wilton, Connecticut. She focuses her practice on pediatric integrative care for pans and pandas, autism spectrum disorder, tick-borne diseases, and other neurodevelopmental disorders. So she'll fit in right well here. Also, she cares for the parents of her pediatric patients, which allows for a comprehensive model of care for the whole family. She is the immediate past president of the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Association and is a fellow of the Medical Academy for Pediatric Special Needs. She frequently lectures on PANS, PANDAS, and ASD for both professional and parent organizations and is the author of the children's book, which we're here to talk to her about today, Super Sam and the Battle Against PANS, PANDAS. In 2016, Dr. Wells was recognized as a young influencer in naturopathic medicine by the AANMC. Welcome, Dr. Wells. We're so excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I am very excited to be here.
So let's just get started. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to naturopathic medicine and specifically to specializing in panda pandas.
So it's a great question. I really don't have that story that a lot of people have, this personalized story of experiencing pans and pandas in their family. But essentially, I got into naturopathic medicine because of my dog, which is very interesting. So my dog, his name was Dylan. It's different than Ed, who you'll find in the book, but his name was Dylan. He was a Greater Swiss Mountain Dog, and he was the love of my life. And unfortunately, at a very young age, after he got his vaccines, he had some trouble. He had epilepsy, and I explored alternative options to help him for epilepsy. And it kind of led me down the path of naturopathic medicine, and I'm so grateful for it. And when I was going through school, I started to work with in the pediatric during my clinical rotations. And I had this one patient, and he was an adolescent with autism. And this kid brought so much joy to like everyone that was around him, like the whole entire staff. They were just so happy when he came in. And I said, you know what, if I worked with kids, I think I'd be happy going to work every single day. And so I really shifted my practice towards autism and adolescents with autism. And then it just sort of morphed into pans and pandas. And I was really drawn to this community because one of the main reasons I went into medicine was to try to keep families together. And we know that the challenges of having a child with complex medical conditions, what that can be like for families. And so I thought that this would be an area and a space that I could really try to make a difference. And that's how I got into pans and pandas. So again, it wasn't like a really a personal experience, but life led me here to work with these families.
Yeah, I will say that I agree that when you can help kids and that it can make just such a big difference because you've got so much more opportunity to make an impact on how their life is going to turn out. And then yes, when the kids are doing well, it's easier for parents to do well. And yeah, it's a whole complex thing. So I 100% agree with you. It's very rewarding to be able to work with kids.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well,
I have to first say on behalf of the entire PANS community that we really, really appreciate you writing Super Sam. Because anything that we can get our hands on to read is super helpful, and especially something to be able to share with our children. That's a really big deal because there's not a whole lot of that out there. So I'm curious what inspired you to write Super Sam and the Battle Against PANS, PANDAS?
So it was interesting because it was actually a maternity leave project, and it was my way to be creative during that time when I was taking time off of work. But it was just this little thought that I had in my head that just came in, like, why don't I write a children's book for the siblings? Because what I really see in working with my PANS family is the whole family is impacted, right? It's not just the child who has PANS, and the parents are impacted, but it's also the siblings. And what I was seeing was that the focus is really on the child that needs the focus and the attention. But what about the other children there. And I was seeing that some of them were confused or had questions, or they started to have some challenges. And I thought that there needed to be some sort of resource for them to better understand what was going on with their brother or sister. And then also to just be seen, like, we see you, we know this is challenging, and let's try to explain what's going on. And it's hard to see someone you love, like a brother or sister, going through it. And that was really what my inspiration was, because I kind of just felt like sometimes the siblings, they needed more support. Talking about PANS and explaining PANS is hard enough to an adult. It's even more challenging to explain it to a child. And so that was really my inspiration, just to show the kids, like, we see you, and, you know, we want to make this easier for you. And here are maybe some tools that can help you get through this, because we're all having a challenging time with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that there's some parents who, because of just the amount of frustration that can come about with having a child with PANS or PANDAS, and then like having to manage multiple siblings. I mean, I don't even know how a parent with multiple children without the challenges of PANS and PANDAS 100%. Or ASD manages multiple kids. I have an only child, and I'm like thankful that I only have to figure out how to parent one child without like all the interpersonal stuff. So I'm sure that there's some parents who can struggle with understanding what their kids are actually experiencing, or like what they're really struggling with, because that focus has to go to like the medically challenging child, right? So what are some of the struggles that you really see these kids experience, so that maybe parents might get like some light bulbs about, oh, maybe this is actually not like a behavioral issue or something else. Maybe this is just this kid needing some support. So yeah, what struggles do you see?
For the siblings in particular?
Yeah, for the siblings.
Yeah, so I see some of them, like the big ones that I see is the attention and focus starts to dwindle a little bit more, or there's a more of like acting out a little bit, like getting frustrated easier, or even withdrawing. I have some parents that start to get worried about their kid because they're withdrawing, they're spending more time in their room, or they're not communicating as effectively or as openly as they previously were, or their emotions are off. So instead, maybe the child is sensitive, and maybe they would have, you know, cried or looked for comfort for their parent, but instead now they're like angry and they're just going to their room, or they're, you know, having some struggles socially with their friends. But I think the biggest thing, like I said, is the attention and focus, and then either withdraw or getting angry. And then that's the way that they're expressing that they need a little bit more, right? Like they need some attention and something. They're trying to get a reaction. And so I also have seen where sometimes they're a little bit more controlling, like they try to control situations, the children, and that can present in many different ways. But I think it's because maybe they feel like their like childhood, the home structure there's not as much structure. Cause again, with PANS and PANDAS, it's the waxing and waning presentation, right? Like the flares make it unpredictable. So their way of trying to control to make everything feel better and safer for them is just to be more controlling, or try to have things a certain way. And it might present, like, I think some parents get a little nervous, like, are they starting to present with PANS symptoms? And it's really not PANS symptoms. Yeah. It's just some of it is you're observing what might get them a little bit more attention, right? Or just their own way of dealing with the challenges of seeing, again, one of the people they love the most struggle so much, right? And I think sometimes we don't think about that as like they're hurting too to see somebody they love struggle.
I think with all of everything that you just talked about, you know, understandably there's, you know, the kiddos that are just specifically struggling, but I feel like so many of us moms and dads, see those things, but then we start to see a little bit more and a little bit more, and we're like, oh my gosh, no, like no way this can possibly happen again. And just in a complete state of shock. How often do you find that siblings end up actually having PANS, PANDAS as well?
You know, it's not as frequently as one may think. I don't have an exact like percentage in my practice. I do see like whole families. What I see is more so like tick-borne disease can be very common. So if I have a child that has underlying tick-borne as part of their PANS presentation, then I see that it's very frequent that the sibling also has some sort of tick-borne disease there that could be contributing some of the behaviors, but it not necessarily being completely a PANS case, but maybe just like an autoimmune encephalitis case due to tick-borne. So, but it does happen. And I can never predict which family is more maybe genetically predisposed for that being the case, or has some other environmental factors that could lead to that. And so I'm always, I think it's very, unfortunately, random on which families have multiple children with PANS, but I do find that in the system, there could be more challenges that aren't related to PANS, like tick-borne disease or anxiety or ADHD, which really, I think those are secondary manifestations of something else going on. But more commonly tick-borne, I'd say pretty high in my practice if I see children that family siblings that they have
especially
tick-borne disease.
Connecticut for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I know it's a little different from where you are, but definitely on the East Coast a lot of that.
I mean, it can get really tough to sort of figure out when you're dealing with a circumstantial or situational stressor, and like, you know, in some ways like truly a traumatic traumatic reaction, right? And so having a trauma response that can look like a physiological problem but might really just be circumstantial, it can be a little bit hard to sort of tease out, including sometimes even like learned behaviors, right? Where kids are seeing their PANS sibling throw a fit, and then they, you know, the parent has just lost their capacity to continue to fight this OCD or whatever, and so they give in to whatever they're demanding, and then the sibling learns, oh well, if I just do that too, then maybe I'll get what I want instead of being the good kid who can control my emotions. So it can get really complex when we're dealing with siblings.
I do see
go ahead.
No, the younger children, sometimes I see more of like the learned behaviors, right? The ones below it after they see their older sibling getting, you know, certain attention in certain ways. So it's challenging.
It's possible that maybe just a different dynamic. We do see a lot of siblings come in that do end up having PANS that like, we'll even say, okay, soft signs, we're not sure. We're not sure if this is just developmental or like developmental issues plus, or like a slightly outside of that, like a one or two standard deviations from typical, but then like something like this flips the switch and like the ticks explode or whatever, it makes it much more clear PANS. So I would say we have a pretty, I don't know how an exact percentage, but it's common enough that I think it's a thing. It's definitely an increased risk for any autoimmune response for somebody, if you have a family member with it, to have an increased risk. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get it. Like you said, it could be like a situational reaction, not just clearly PANS because of the PANS sibling.
I think that I'm seeing more recently, though, more families, like more siblings being affected than I did in the beginning of my career. And again, I think it just comes down with the toxic load in general. I'm seeing kids are sicker than they were in the beginning of my career. So I don't know if that's also been your experience as well.
Yeah. And I think there's also more awareness too, you know, and like, we've got to walk that line from parents who see PANS everywhere, right? Because that can happen because they're so traumatized and triggered by everything that like anything and everything looks like it could be a PANS situation, to actually being able to have like the early warning signs clued in on. So they're catching it too, where it might've just gone, you know, unnoticed before. I'm curious what supports you recommend for parents as they are helping to guide their children through the challenging family dynamic when there really is not like a multiple PANS situation, but like PANS plus like situational stressors.
Yeah, I think the biggest supports that I tell parents is really they need to take care of themselves, which is so much easier said than done. And I'm very aware of that. And I think, you know, people can kind of like roll their eyes when I say that, but it really is amazing to me when the mother, I'm going to focus mainly on the mother, but it could be for both parents, but when the mother feels better, the kid feels better, like without us literally implementing any support. And so I always say to the mom, I know it's really difficult and it's much easier said than done, but do it as a way to treat your child. Like a treatment for your child is you to get some support. So whatever that looks like for them, because what fills somebody's cup up is going to be different than what fills somebody else's cup. But what I've seen underlying through my experience and my practice is when moms feel like they're part of a community of some sort, right? And so just understanding that you are not alone going through this, and there are a lot of other amazing, strong, beautiful mothers who are also going through it and who truly get it. I think finding that community, or, and it could be, doesn't have to be a lot of people. It could be one, two other people that get it. That could make the world of a difference. And then going from like, whatever is your creative outlet, doing that or going to therapy or whatnot, but it's just having that support in a different way that might be outside of the home. Cause it's great when we have a supportive partner or we have supportive family, but sometimes they might not get it completely. So I think community would be my number one that I'm seeing for the parents in my practice.
I'm going to pause us right here to reiterate what you said, because I was the mom that was like, no, I'm fine. I'm going to get my kid through this. Like, she's first, and then I'll work on my own self. And man, since, you know, getting her recovered and well, and then doing my own healing, it would have made such a huge impact. And also I see lots of moms that are working on their own healing as their kids heal. And it's just such a beautiful thing to see mom go from an understandable mess, stressed out, freaking out, to just relaxed. And then you can just see how things start to evolve with her kiddo and things get easier and run a little bit smoother. And so I just want to second that, because it's such a, I think it's such an important thing, and I did it the wrong way. So I want everyone else to do it the opposite way than I did it. So for additional support through, healing, do you recommend therapy for siblings, of your PANS clients? And if so, specifically what type of therapy?
I do recommend therapy for the siblings. It just really depends on, again, what that child is gravitating to. Cause if you have a kid who is a little bit withdrawn or quiet, they're not going to be ones that are going to really benefit from talk therapy, right? So I think that's what we think about with therapy is talk therapy, but maybe they would benefit from art therapy, right? Like maybe they would express themselves that way. And I have a ton of siblings who actually are really creative and get everything out and express themselves that way without being verbal, like without expressing in words how they're feeling. I've had a lot that have done, you know, equestrian therapy. They've gone and worked with animals, and that's been extremely therapeutic for them. And those are kind of the outside therapies that I found to be important, but I've always found that it's not so much the specific therapy, but it's the therapist, like whoever your child is going to connect with and open up to and be relaxed around, that's the type of therapy. So I guess I would say finding a therapist is what's more important than the actual therapy itself.
Yeah. Fair enough. So I'm curious though about whether specific trauma therapies can become really, really important for family members as the kids are healing from PANS. And we're still seeing, I mean, I don't know about you see in your practice, but we see it a lot in our practice, and a lot of people in our community share that healing can almost be harder than dealing with PANS crisis after crisis, because when you get relief and then you have like a backslide or a flare that's inevitable in a true healing process, backslides will happen. Eventually they'll stop, but the getting relief, the periods of relief almost make the backslides feel worse, even if they are significantly easier than the flares used to be. And so I'm curious, we will sometimes, you know, homeopathy, which is our area of expertise, can really help people process this. But we have some people that were just like, you need homeopathy to help with like the susceptibility to this type of reaction to it, but you still got to process the trauma. So how often do you recommend trauma therapy for PANS kids, siblings, or parents as they're getting to this place where they're healing, but still having a lot of reactions to it?
Usually I'll recommend it specifically for the parents, more so than for the children and the siblings, just because I think it can be hard to sometimes access it. And I find that our kids are very resilient, whether it's the child going through PANS or the siblings, I just find they're extremely resilient. It's more of the parents actually, because I see the same exact pattern that you're describing, where even though things are getting better and the flares are, you know, decreasing in severity, frequency, and duration, what I see is that anytime there's a flare, though, we're going back to the PTSD mode of when it first happened, right? And so I will tell parents to consider some of that type of therapy. It just depends, again, how open they are to it. What I found to be significantly helpful is actually hypnotherapy for a lot of my parents, my mother's in particular, and also some of like the inner child work. Again, it's not specific trauma work, but it actually has been significant in the responses that I'm getting from the parents. And I have these moms coming in and they're like, they're just different afterwards. And it, their child then is different. It's fascinating really to witness, but also so beautiful in the sense of how connected we are to our children. And it can be very powerful.
I mean, it just comes back to that concept of, I mean, we see the same thing that you do. If mom takes care of herself and mom treats herself, kids get better, even if you make no changes with the kids. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, obviously kids still need to address the issues that are underlying it, but it's like they can access it easier and they can heal easier if mom is doing better. So we've gotten to the point, and again, it can also be whatever the primary parent is or the primary focus for the child is. So it could be dad in some situations, in many cases it's mom. So we say like the mom or the primary parent is the nervous system of the family. And like when mom feels better, everything gets easier and like everybody can heal in an easier way. So it just, everything comes back to that, right? Like the hypnotherapy, the trauma therapy, all of that just creates a lot more ease with settling the nervous system of mom.
So. Absolutely.
I would imagine too, that like doing this while Avery was healing, like this would have helped me specifically be able to shift my attention back to little sister. Cause during the time of PANS, little sister was completely forgotten about, which is, I love this book because you didn't forget about the siblings you're remembering for us, but I feel that some of my mom guilt, is I feel guilty because it's like she was forgotten about for a while, not totally forgotten about, but, and I would imagine that part of healing myself would have been my ability to kind of refocus, calm down my attention and kind of obsessive stuff that I was doing around PANS, and being able to return back to being a calm, you know, patient, attentive, present mom with my younger child too. So just thinking out loud.
Yeah. Jody, I know you wanted to find out about Dr. Ed, which was mentioned in the book, and the role that he plays in caring for Dr. Wells's patients. So tell us about your sidekick.
So Dr. Ed, his name is Ed. And one of my patients said, oh, he's Dr. Ed. And I just loved it. And, you know, held on to that. But Ed, he's 11 years old now, and he's a rescue. And I rescued him when he was really young. And he's like a lab husky type mix. And he comes to the office with me, not so much as often anymore, because he's getting older. It's a little harder to get him in and out of the car, but he's fantastic with the children. He's just so calm. And so he's just a calming presence in the space. And he's really great with the blood draws. So whenever the blood draws is kind of where he shines, like he goes in when the child is in the chair, and if they're upset or whatnot, he comes over and he just maybe puts his head on, you know, their lap so they could touch him if they wanted to, or he's just having him there, I think, is something can distract the child. But he's really made a difference in my life and my practice, I think, in some of my patients' life. And he's just, I had to include him in the book as a way to like thank him for, you know, being there with me and doing the work with me, right, for these families. So, yeah, I had to include him there.
Well, we're dog lovers, and I love that because our dogs will show up on our podcast sometimes, or and like our in our Facebook group when we're doing videos, they show up a lot. And before the pandemic, I had two different dogs that came to my office with me that also were a great comfort to a lot of people. We don't do blood draws here, so they never had to like stand up for that kind of thing. So that's actually pretty impressive that it helps them with blood draws. But yeah, I love whenever we can bring our furry sidekicks into it. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you included him in the book because that's is a mom that has experience with a kiddo that spent a lot of time in the hospital and knowing what it's like when that dog comes around, it changes mm-hmm. everything. And mm-hmm. and they're such little angels on earth. And it's wild how they can shift, you know, such a stressful emotional time for our children and turn it into something positive and sweet and loving. So I love that you included him.
Yes, thanks for giving him a shout out here. I'll tell him, he'll be excited.
Well, Dr. Wells, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us to share more about your book and the motivation for writing it and your experience that goes beyond what you shared in the book. Because obviously the book is geared toward kids. So here it's Super Sam and the Battle Against Pans and Pandas. We'll put a link to it in the show notes for anybody who wants to purchase it for sharing with your kids. And you know, giving us the extension beyond. So like seeing the ways it impacts siblings and then sharing with us some of your experience for ways that the family who's impacted by PANS can really get support. So we're really grateful for the time that you gave to us. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about you?
So you can go to my website, lindsaywellsnd.com. And I also am on Instagram where I post some of the research about PANS, pandas, and tick-borne disease. And those are the main places where you can find me.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
You.
Bye.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for Pans and Pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.